Final morning show today from WRCO, WRCE. In the studio with us today, State Senator Howard Markline and Representative Tony Kurtz. And we're in to talk a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and some things going on in state government. Good morning, gentlemen. How's everything going?
You're doing well.
Yeah, we're doing well. Beautiful day.
It sure
you go
is.
From summer yesterday to, well, back to spring later this week, it sounds
like. Yeah, yeah. But it's, you know, I mean, I love this time of year. It's, you know, cool enough, you know, it's get things done. And I don't know, even the smells. I was riding with Peggy yesterday, and even the smell of manure out in the fields, it's like, that's a sign of spring. Cow yards are getting cleaned out. The pits are getting, you know, that's a sure sign of spring. So
yeah.
She didn't agree with me that that smell was a
prosperity,
a positive one.
Southwest Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you been out in the field yet, Tony?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I got all
Have you?
This whole weekend was beautiful. I got all my oats and alfalfa seeded and got them called a pack, put some lime on, so it was great. And then I know it's a pretty good, successful youth hunt, turkey hunt for a lot of folks in my area up there in beautiful Waniwok. So
great. Maybe a little rain tomorrow will get those seeds going.
Absolutely. And like I said, we need the moisture. I know the snow that we had about a week and a half ago, I know that all soaked in and didn't have a lot of, had minimal runoff, so we can still use it, though.
Have you had the chance to work on any ag-related bills lately or anything that's passed?
Not yet. We did have a bill with Senator Ball, Wig, and I that basically, for believe it or not, in the state of Wisconsin, fluid milk, you can transport that up to 98,000 pounds. But fluid milk was it. You couldn't do any other type of liquid like whey. And whey was limited to 80,000 pounds. So it was something that Senator Ballwig and I were, by the Wisconsin cheesemakers, a bunch of people came to us and said, hey, you know, we can do liquid milk, but we can't do liquid whey. And whey, as most of your listeners know, is a byproduct of the cheesemaking process. You know, years ago, you used to just spread whey as a waste, but now whey is a huge commodity, and we ship it not only all over the United States, we ship it all over the world. And so with something that we got changed this session where you can transport liquid whey up to 98,000 pounds. It's kind of crazy to think that 18,000 pounds makes a difference, but talking to a lot of the cheese makers and the milk haulers, they're actually going to go out and buy some new equipment now so they can go up to 98,000 pounds because of the extra trucks you're taking off the road, the extra labor, the actual fuel savings. In the long run, it actually reduces emissions. It's actually, when you look at the numbers. And so a year from now, we're going to get the data to kind of share with everybody what the savings was going from the increasing it from, you know, just that 18,000 pounds, the difference it makes. It actually pretty astonishing.
Yeah, it is that you would make that much difference, but in the long run, going to save some money for some people too.
Well, and like I said, the truck traffic off the road, and we can already do it for liquid milk. And all we're saying now is, you know, liquid whey is, you know, a product of milk. So let's go ahead and just allow that to have the same standard as liquid milk did.
We used to feed it to the hogs.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, years ago. And it's interesting. You know, the two wonderful plants you have here, you know, between Schreiber and Foremost, that whey, it's interesting. A couple years ago, you remember all the tariffs that we've had. China, the only thing China would not import, they kept importing whey. Because whey in China, many people, maybe a decade, you remember the infant formula debacle they had in China where so many infants actually died because of the poor quality. Well, now they want American whey because it goes into their baby formula. So it just shows, you know, just the quality of the product that we produce here in Wisconsin is actually not only going, like I said, to the United States, but all over the world, the whey products.
Howard, anything ag-related you'd like to talk about?
Well, no, I guess the one thing that is ag-related, I think, is the Ag Road Improvement Program, and that was legislation that Travis Tranel and I authored about a year ago at this time, and we got it in the budget, $150 million for rural town roads that are posted, basically, okay? And so the first round of applications for ARIP closed a couple weeks ago now, and I just got the data on, and I was just curious as to, you know, how popular that was going to be, the amount of people that would be signing up for that. So this first round of grants is going to be for $50 million. The total in the bill was $150 million, but this round is $50 million. And so there was 160 applications received, and totaling $260 million in proposed project costs. $234 million of that would be the state share. So that indicates to me you got $234 million requested for a $50 million pot of money that supports the argument that there is demand for this. And we don't have the data yet with regard to where this money or where the applications came from. I'm hoping like heck that some of my local farmers and local town boards applied for this money, and some of our rural roads will benefit from this program. So anyway, I'm glad we put the money aside a year ago, and I'm happy to hear the demand is out there for this, and I look forward to kind of digging into the numbers a little more closely down the road to see how much that could be local money.
Mm-hmm. You've been a real proponent of rural roads, Tony, I know.
Well, I do want to just caveat off what Howard said. That was a tremendous lift that the two of them got last budget, you know, to get $150 million earmarked for that. But the other thing about what Howard just said is that it's overprescribed. That's something that we look at when we look at the Finance Committee, the different programs we have in the state. You know, is it popular? Is it working? Is it easy for people to utilize? And if it's overprescribed, then obviously going into the next budget, we say, okay, there's a need and a demand for that. You know, like if there's a program that's underprescribed, of course, we're not going to add more money to that into the next budget. So it's good to see you're getting the numbers from the locals to say this is a need. And I think everybody that drives on the roads know there is a need for our roads. And we have done a lot of good work over the last several budgets, bipartisan to put money into the roads. It was long overdue. But this is just another avenue that helps our locals.
The first round was $50 million of the 150. The second round will be later this year, I think in the fall of 2024, for $100 million. So again, if towns didn't apply this round, they've got another chance coming up here in about 6 months. So, you know, again, keep let's get I'd love to have this money. Tony and I would both have a lot of this money come back here to Southwest Wisconsin.
Most definitely. We can use it.
Yep.
Yeah. Last time you were here, you talked about electric vehicle charging, too. Did you get that passed then?
It got passed. It got signed into law. And so that was it was one of those bills that we had about 40 different groups that we worked with because it touches so many different businesses and governmental units. So, yeah, it got signed into law. And essentially what it would do would be to permit businesses to sell power. Right now, the way the state law was set up is that only utilities could sell electricity. And we have businesses like Quick Trip, Culver's, hotels, grocery stores, especially along big travel corridors, that would love to be able to sell power for electric vehicles. And so this bill allows that. And so I don't know that we're going to see anything or much of that impact here in Richland County, but along major travel corridors, the interstates primarily, you're going to see, I think, some investment there by, again, the convenience stores. They want people traveling from Chicago to Minocqua are probably going to have to, you know, in their electric vehicle, have to stop someplace and charge. And so, you know, the Quick Trips of the world would like them to stop, charge in Stevens Point, and hopefully do some shopping, buy some groceries, buy some beer on their way up to Minocqua. And so that was the bill in essence. And also there's some federal money that was sitting there, $78 million, and that will enable the Department of Transportation to deploy some of that federal money. And we're one of the last states to to adopt this to, and the, we would have lost the money. And so it doesn't impact any state taxes. And the other good thing I think about it is that we are going to be charging 3 cents per kilowatt hour for charging, and that money is going to go into the state transportation fund. So it'll be a way for us to capture, you know, some the use of resources that you and I pay gas tax for, the you know, use of our roads, and people that drive electric vehicles will also be contributing then down the road.
Do you get much feedback about electric vehicles?
I don't want to. There's some misconception about this bill that we passed and that the governor signed, that somehow this mandates electrical vehicle usage. That this does not mandate any type of electrical vehicle usage. To Senator Markline's point, it leverages the $78 million that the federal government we were going to lose, and all it does is to help build out the infrastructure, especially along our larger corridors, electrical charging. That's what it does. It does not mandate it. It just provides that build out that we need to do along the interstate. And to let $78 million go, that would be pretty foolish as far as the state. So I know that was a heavy lift. You know, believe it or not, a lot of people had a little 2 cents in it, and that was a lot of good work by Senator Markline.
Yeah, if they are going to take off, the more stations, the better. It may be more enticing for somebody to have an electric vehicle and kind of ease your mind that, hey, I got plenty of places to stop, right?
You know, when you think about it, and again, I doubt if I will ever own an electric vehicle. And I don't know that how many people in Southwest Wisconsin are going to own an electric vehicle, at least in the near term. But the tourism industry, for example, were very supportive of this because we've got people in Illinois, again, traveling to northern Wisconsin that they, you know, We don't want them to not come here because they can't charge their vehicles somewhere along the way. So the tourism industry was very, very supportive of this, and as well as, again, you think about all those businesses along those major corridors that they'd love you to stop and spend 20 minutes, 25 minutes charging, but coming into their store and buying something. You know, that's the whole incentive for these private sector businesses to be interested in this.
We haven't talked to you since redistricting, and that looks a little bit clearer now, Tony. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because your area is going to look a little different, isn't it?
Yeah, so we currently are in the 50th Assembly District, which is all the, you know, the beautiful city of Richland Center, and then just obviously the northern townships of Richland County. That will change as of the next, you know, in January of 2025, and our new district number will be the 41st. Assembly District, and that will include all of Richland County. So it's not just it'll be just one Assembly District, and that will be the 41st. And then our Senate District also changes, and our Senate District will be the 14th Senate District. Unfortunately, we're going to lose Senator Markline as our senator. He'll get pushed further south. But then Senator Baldwig, she's up for election this year. So we'll see if she's, wins in November of 2024. But January 2025 is when the new maps take effect.
Are people kind of confused about that? Are you kind of trying to educate people?
Oh, yeah. Right, no, there's a lot of confusion out there. A lot of questions. And, you know, I will say this, and some people are quite upset because, I think Senator Markline and I work very well together, and we'll continue to work very well together. It's just, I think, having him literally the office next to mine, I thought we worked very well on a lot of issues, especially for Richland County. So, and like I said, that's not going to change. I know Senator Baldwin and I will do the same, but Howard and I had a great working relationship, so...
Anything you'd like to add, Howard?
Yeah, it's different. You know, somebody asked me. What was your first emotion? And I said, you know, I think about all of the friends that I've met in the northern part of the current Senate district. I was up in Juneau County recently, and you know, I'm driving by these places. I'm going, you know. And you know, you develop relationships, strong relationships, and these are friends. And so, you know, I'm disappointed. I'm not going to be able to, you know, see those people that, like I have in the past, but I also have an opportunity here to make a lot of new friends. And Crawford County is now in my Senate district, so I've been spending a fair amount of time in Crawford County, and will continue to do so. And then I've got parts of Dane County and been down there as well. So, you know, it's kind of a, for me, kind of a mixed bag. Like I said, I'm going to miss people that I've had the pleasure of working with for a long time. And as Tony said, you know, like he and I have worked together on a lot of issues. And a lot of times it isn't the bills that are passed. It's the constituent problems. You know, Tony and I met this morning with a constituent here, you know, and it's exactly that kind of thing that, you know, you won't see that in your news update today, but you know, just helping constituents, and I've enjoyed working with Tony, and also not just Tony and I working so well together, but also our staff. I mean, they work incredibly well. We're both blessed with outstanding staffs in our offices. So, so anyway, you know, we'll. We're still going to be in the same offices, next to each other. So, you know, we'll continue to communicate and work together.
So you won't represent Richland County anymore when it takes
That's
over?
Correct.
Yeah. So you're going to be more Iowa County. You said Crawford.
Crawford, Iowa, Grant. Lafayette, Greene, and part of Dane.
Okay. That will be a change. Yeah. You talked about what's the political climate like right now in Madison? I mean, we hear about things all the time. Is it better? Is it worse? Or how do you look at it, Howard?
Better than what?
Better than what we hear.
I would say, like, in the trenches, it's pretty, it's really pretty good. You know, I mean, of all the bills that that I got passed this year, the vast majority of them were bipartisan. Maybe all of them were bipartisan, so which is good, you know. And a lot of these, you don't hear about that though. That doesn't make news. But you know, it's, you know, I don't want to call it friction or whatever. Like on 2 days from now, the state Supreme Court will hear the oral arguments in Evers v. Markline, you know, where the governor has sued me. And the Joint Finance Committee for our oversight over the Knowles Nelson stewardship money. And so, you know, I mean, that kind of stuff probably doesn't help a lot, you know. How is it? It's probably what you hear, you know. And I think on a lot of things at the legislative level, I think there's a lot of cooperation between the parties, you know, and on committees and getting things done, but maybe not quite so much with the executive branch.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Tony?
No, and, you know, it was interesting. On Saturday, Senator Baldwin and I came to the Richland County Electric 88th annual meeting, and this actually came up. I had a wonderful lady ask me about that, and I said, you know, the vast majority of the bills, like I said, we'll get the final numbers when it all said and done, but it'll be well over 90% of the bills will have bipartisan support. And unfortunately, to your point, that doesn't necessarily get articulated to a lot of our constituents, especially when you maybe turn on the 6 o'clock news. You'll see everything that, you know, things we disagree on. And let's be honest, there are things we disagree on. But to Howard's point, there's a lot of bills that we do agree on. I mean, I had 12 pieces of legislation signed into law, and that doesn't even include the items that, you know, Howard and I, we actually put into the budget. I mean, so when you look at this session, particularly for rural Wisconsin, it once again, I am proud of the work we did. You know, we got County O, we got a lot of other funding, little things. We got all that shared revenue that the county and all our townships needed. I'm those were all bipartisan. And so, unfortunately, that does not get articulated like it should.
Both of you, I know, have been working toward the campus, you know, getting things kind of back in shape for the areas that have lost their two-year campuses. Any update on that, Howard?
Yeah, so the governor did sign Tony and I authored the bill to provide some campus community transition grants back to counties. And we started this shortly after I guess the nail was in the coffin here. In Richland County. So, and we were talking to local leaders here about this because, you know, here in Richland County, the county owns the campus. And so what's going to happen with that property? And there's all kinds of possibilities. And that's going to be a local decision and stuff. But for any, to convert the campus to any future use, whether it be economic development, housing, you know, whatever that use might be, it's probably going to take some money. And so Tony and I did a bill to provide $2 million back to Richland County for that, as well as some other campuses that are, you know, going to be in a similar situation or are in a similar situation to here to Richland County. So so anyway, I think that that just got signed in the last month, and you know, hopefully the county is going to be making an application. I think that goes through the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. And at this point, there's not a whole lot of strings attached to it. That was the way we drafted it. We didn't want to be prescriptive in terms of how to be used for a certain, you know, purpose. So it's going to be up to the county here to decide what they want to do. But there is going to be $2 million available to the county, and the application would go through the WEDC. And I would be surprised if that application gets done here relatively soon.
The other communities in the state that are losing their two-year universities, are they in line for $2 million, or is it all about the same money?
Yes, $2 million, I think, for all of them, right? Wasn't the total?
So the total package is $20
million. Okay.
But in the bill, Richland was $2 million, Fond du Lac was $2 million, Washington County was $2 million, Marinette is up to $2 million. So the other campuses... you know, they can apply, but those four, including most importantly, in my humble opinion, Richland, will, their $2 million is designated just $2 million for Richland County. So just to let you know, I mean, unfortunately, there'll probably be more two-year campuses closing. I mean, this is, when you look at the demographics, and I know I've talked about this before, in 1960, you had 25 babies for every 1,000. You know, right now we're at 10 babies for every 1,000. It's just when you look at the numbers and the projections for birth rates, it's not boding well for, you know, and so the two-year campus, I think there's a recognition from the UW system that, you know, we need to scale back. And I think this is something that we as a state owe these communities to help them out a little bit.
You've had contact, I know, with Platteville and some of the other four-year universities. Howard, obviously there's concern there from them, you know, about their whole district, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was in Platteville a couple weeks ago for the investiture of Tammy Vetovich. She's the 15th chancellor at UW-Platteville, first woman chancellor at that campus. And so it was good to be there for that event. Chancellor Vetovich and I have had a great relationship. We talk probably every few weeks about just whatever's going on at campus. I'll be there next week or week after, I guess. We have a meeting with her again. And she's they're being very proactive about reaching out to us to keep us informed. So, you know, and she's, to her credit, she is fully aware of some of the demographic challenges that Tony just talked about. And she has been, you know, it's never fun to make tough decisions like they had to make at Platteville. But again, when you look at what happened in Platteville over the last 10 years, their enrollment dropped 25%. Okay. The number of administrative positions increased 54%. And obviously, you know, you don't have to be an accountant to figure out that that's unsustainable when your enrollment is dropping and your the number of administrative positions is increasing dramatically. So she made the tough decision, and I think The UW system was very supportive of her decisions, reducing some of the staff down there over a period of 12 months. So that's all staggered. So, you know, and she understands, you know, it's enrollment is key. Enrollment's going to drive the economics at UW-Platteville and every one of our campuses. So she's got a good handle on that. And also there's been more conversations going on with Baraboo, with UW Richland, Sauk County regarding Baraboo campus. And so again, she's very in tune to what's what the possibilities could be there. So our upper or higher ed is, you know, it's a butts in the seat problem. You know, we need, and everybody's competing for the same students. You know, it's the tech colleges are competing for them. Our employers are, you know, we need bodies, you know, in our businesses. And so they're, you know, competing for the same, the apprenticeship programs. We've got a number of, in the construction industry, you can make pretty darn good money today in construction, you know, as an apprentice in plumbing, electrical, carpentry, in the trades, you know. So, again, the competition for that dwindling number of high school graduates is intense, and the UW, I think, is trying to, you know, reposition their strategy and repurpose, you know, some of those campuses for the future.
Baraboo, Sauk County, obviously they're big in your area, and they've done pretty well though. What's their status? Any idea, Tony?
So they have a really good relationship with M8 Madison Area Technical College. They're teaming up with them quite a bit, and to be fair too, Sauk County has done quite a bit of investments over the years in that campus. So it's a little bit of dynamics. I'm not going to sit here and kid you. I'm not sure how viable, even with all that partnership, it will be in the future. Who knows? Time will tell. But I do want to give the chancellor a hats off. You know, when Howard and I met with her probably 6 weeks ago, her point was, I don't need more money. I need to right-size the ship. And that's when you talk about, you know, your enrollment went down by 25%, but your administrative staff went up by 54%. She knew what she needed to do. And I guess my point is, when you look at Platteville, that's just one campus. I'm pretty confident when you start looking at all the other campuses, like a Green Bay, like a Superior, like a Stevens Point or a La Crosse, unfortunately, you might see very similar numbers where enrollment went down, but maybe administrative staff increased. The only campus that actually increased in enrollment was Madison. And so that's, you know, that is a little bit of a problem when your only campus increasing in numbers is Madison.
So. Indeed. We'll come back and talk more on the morning show with Representative Tony Kurtz and State Senator Howard Markline. On our morning show today, State Senator Howard Markline, Representative Tony Kurtz are in the building here with their monthly visit as we talk about things pertaining to Southwest Wisconsin, WRC listening area, and across the state as well. We wanted to talk a little bit about the EMS board, some things that you wanted to maybe mention there as well.
Yeah, so one of the bills that we passed and was signed into law would expand the composition of the state EMS board from 11 to 13. And I did, over the last number of years, did a number of listening sessions with our volunteer EMS units all over my district. And we got a lot of good feedback from them. And some of that feedback, Tony Kurtz was able to get into the shared revenue bill last May or June, which is awesome. But one of the requests that they've had, I've heard this consistently, is we need representation on that EMS board from rural Wisconsin. Okay, so this bill, and when we went through the composition of the EMS board, it's basically paramedics and above, including doctors, and they're all from pretty much big parts of the state. You don't have any Casanovas or you know, we don't. We just, you know, they're not from, from our part of the state. So the legislation that we passed was signed into law, added two members to the state EMS board. They had to be below the paramedic level, so EMT, EMT advanced, okay, kind of people that we have a lot of in our area out here, and they've got to be from rural areas, okay, smaller rural communities. So everybody who's listening to this right now probably is in that area that, that qualifies. But so that the governor is now accepting applications to fill these two new seats, and I guess I just encourage, and I know our volunteers are busy. They don't need one more job, one more volunteer opportunity, but this is an opportunity for our volunteer EMTs to step up and to apply for two of these seats on this on the state EMS board. And again, when policy is being developed, when training standards are, and hours and all that are being addressed, you know, we need to have our small rural areas, you know, saying, hey, wait a minute, that may be good for Janesville, or your idea might be great for Madison, but out here it just doesn't make any sense. So just having a voice is important. So again, I know our people are busy. They do a tremendous job for our rural EMS units. But please consider, you know, there's a website. I'm not going to try to read this thing on the radio here, but there's a website if people are interested. Or call the office as well, and we can help you out with that.
How much of a commitment is it? They meet a few times?
Yeah, they meet. Yeah, they meet. And I'm sure there's a couple of subcommittees and that sort of thing. But again, you know, we need... Yeah, we've created the framework now for rural non-paramedic people to be on this board. We got the framework now. Let's make sure that we get those two positions filled with good people. And I'd love to have somebody from Southwest Wisconsin on that board.
You've talked about reimbursement for emergency services, Tony. Anything you'd like to add with that?
Well, just one thing Howard mentioned about the shared revenue. I just want to, we have a, what they call a funding assistance program, and that helps with helps supply our ambulances and all the lot of medications, things like that. And for many, many years, that was supposed to be at $2.2 million, and matter of fact, it actually slipped down to $1.8 million. Howard and I got it, the last budget got it back up to $2.2 million, but in the shared revenue bill, that goes from 2.2 all the way up to $25 million, just to help with EMS providers across the state, because they need the funding, and something I'm glad we got in the bill. The other thing that we did get passed was, so our state over the next couple decades, or the next couple years, we're going to be upgrading our Wisconsin communication system, WISCOM. So there's going to be grant funding opportunities for folks to get their radios replaced. Believe it or not, these radios have to be a certain standard, you know, just like, you know, an update on your cell phone or your home computer. You know, these radios also have to get updated. So that was something that we just got signed in a law. There's money put aside. So communities, it's an 80-20 match. So the state's going to pick up 80%. You know, that the state's going to pick up, or the community has to pick up 20% to help the offset the cost of these radios as we upgrade over the next couple of years. That's something that Senator Markline and I got in the budget and also got signed in the law. So I'm pretty happy. That'll help a lot of our smaller communities as well.
Another thing that's been in the news a lot lately, PFAS. Anything new on that front?
Sure. What does PFAS stand for? And I can't repeat it because I'm not sure exactly what it is. But these are the forever chemicals that are used in all kinds of products all over that we use probably on a daily basis. And also, it's been included in firefighting foam. So, you know, I know up in the northern part of our district, up by Camp Douglas, you know, with the Volk Field up there, they have used that and stuff. So, anyway, but PFAS, it's an issue, and I don't know that we've got the significant impact locally here that we have, like up in northern and northeastern Wisconsin. They've got some situations where it's bad. I mean, they can't drink the water, and so. In the budget, the governor had requested $100 million to address this PFAS issue. In the legislature and Joint Finance Committee, we increased that to $125 million for a PFAS trust fund. And there's been a lot of kind of back and forth in the media regarding between the governor and the legislature on this thing. And what the bill that we passed in the legislature, and it's on the governor's desk. It was. He vetoed it last week, unfortunately. But what the bill that we passed would provide the funding to local communities, would allow the DNR to direct this money to where the need is, start cleaning the stuff up. But it would also provide some protection for innocent people, okay, that may have PFAS on their property that they didn't even know about, okay? And I guess I can give you an example, and Senator Wimberger has been as real strong advocate for this. Up in northeastern Wisconsin, we've got farmers, lots of farmers, that they agreed to have the municipality spread municipal waste on their fields, okay? And, the DNR signed off on it, the community signed off on it, and the farmer says, sure, you can spread your sludge and waste out in our fields, that's fine. And lo and behold, there's PFAS in some of that sludge. So now this farmer has got PFAS on their land, okay? It's contaminated. So now try to get a loan or try to sell your farm with contamination on it, okay? And it basically freezes out those farmers because you can't sell, you can't borrow. So the bill that we passed in the legislature would have provided protection to, again, the farmers in my example, that they didn't even know what PFAS even stood for. Nobody did. You know, this wasn't something that anybody did intentionally. It just, you know, it's something that we've learned about here in the last few years. So anyway, the bill that we passed in the legislature would have provided protection so that the DNR couldn't go after, these people and farmers, innocent farmers that didn't know that they even had PFAS on their land. So the governor vetoed that bill, unfortunately. And because of that, I don't believe the $125 million is going to get spent or can get spent addressing a lot of needs in the state of Wisconsin, which is unfortunate. And we had co-chair Mark Bourne and I had communicated with the governor before he vetoed the bill saying, please don't veto this. This is going to provide an opportunity for us to deploy $125 million to do a lot of cleanup, to do a lot of help for a lot of those communities that need the help. But unfortunately, in the end, I don't know if it's trial attorneys or whoever got to him, but what he is asking is to not have any of those protections for some of those innocent property owners.
Indeed. Anything you'd like to add, Tony?
Well, Howard explained it quite well, but I also want everybody to realize there's approximately 800,000 septic tanks in the state of Wisconsin, and I imagine quite a few of your listeners have a septic tank. And I hate to tell you this, but believe it or not, toilet paper has PFAS. You know, your nonstick pans at your house when you cook has PFAS. And so I would imagine the vast majority of septic systems in the state of Wisconsin have PFAS in their tank. And once again, remember, each septic tank has a leach field, all right? That leach field, gets rid of the excess water. That probably is going to have PFAS. So the point is, and why I'm so adamant about this, is if the governor got his way, everybody in that chain would be a polluter. And so the waste haulers who's picking up the septic, the waste, or the people that spread it on the farmer's field or the farmer, in the way the governor would like to have it, is everybody along that chain is a polluter. And all due respect, I don't think those folks unknowingly, is one producing PFAS and then unknowingly, transporting it and spreading it, et cetera. It's just, there's a lot of people that basically, if you wanted accountability, you have to go after that other person. So in other words, the waste hauler would have to sue the farmer. The farmer would have to sue the waste hauler. The waste hauler would have to sue the septic owner of the septic tank. It's just, the only people that would get rich under this scenario, in my very humble opinion, are all these trial lawyers. Because all we're trying to do is we don't want these people that had nothing to do with the contamination of PFAS being held accountable for the PFAS. To me, that is not fair to the farmers. It's not fair to the, you know, the waste haulers. It's just ripe with future litigation, in my very humble opinion. And the governor had every opportunity to sign this. And maybe, you know, maybe there's something further we can do moving down the line. But right now, that's the big standoff. We just don't want everybody labeled as a polluter.
I would think it's going to be harder to find places to spread as well. If that's the
case. If I'm a farmer, like, so I called one of our waste haulers in our area, and I won't say the name, and we had a good conversation about this, and they said that is fantastic fertilizer. And no, if now they're saying that my farm could be in the future, you know, held accountable for this, heck no, I don't want it. And so to your point, they are going to have a hard time. But now the EPA, and like I said, this is... Everybody in listening right now benefited from PFAS one way or the other. I mean, I know we're finding more and more about it, but the fact of the matter is it is everywhere. And now the EPA just came out with a standard. Basically, it's 10 parts per million. Depending on the type of PFAS, it's down to 4 parts per million. I don't even think we as a state or society truly understand what that will take to get down to that level. I mean, because there really is no technology, unfortunately, at the point to truly get you down to that. So, yeah, we can say that's got, you know, but then, okay, how do we clean it up? That's the big issue. And then, of course, everybody wants to blame everybody else. You know, that's unfortunately the society we live in. And something like this, it's not that simple. I mean, you can go after the manufacturers, but... Okay, there's only a set number of them. So this is so complicated, and I just think we are opening a Pandora box that I don't think we truly understand. Do we need to do something? Yes, we do. But by labeling everybody a polluter, I don't think that's the right way to go.
The other hot topic has been public education. We've had a lot of referendums. I think it was like 60% passed in the state, Howard, but I think we're going to see a few more of those. And probably the hot topic is funding for public education. Anything, I know there's kind of some finger pointing going on both sides of the aisle there. But
yeah, you know, and obviously K-12 education is the number one use of our state funds. It's a priority, continues to be a priority. And, you know, I'm open, to having conversations again in the next budget about this. You know, the challenge we have out here is largely a declining enrollment, you know, and it's, because it's basically you're paid, your budget is butts in this, you know, paid it based on butts in the seat. $12,000 per pupil is kind of the math on average. And so, you know, you lose 4 students at Weston, and where do you cut $44,000? I mean, your transportation is the same, heat and lights the same. You can't lay off a staff person for 4. You know, I mean, it's just it's a challenge. You know, when you have declining enrollment, which is what we have in virtually all of my school district and my Senate district. So, you know, something we have to take a look at again down the road. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we can come up with something. People have said, you know, you shouldn't tie it to enrollment. And I'm like, well, so should a school district with 2,000 students get the same as somebody with 400 students? You know, I mean, there's got to be some reasonable, you know, allocation there. So, and again, it's the, you know, that the problem we have largely here is declining enrollment. And, you know, it's an issue. And I wish we could, you know, there's something magic. This, Tony talked about the demographic issues, you know, with higher ed, and it's the same, you know, it starts, you know, the first impact is at K-12. Where we see the lower numbers and stuff. So anyway, and with K-12, one of the advantages we do have in K-12 is we can look at, we know how many kindergartners we have in our schools, first grade, second grade, third grade. So we can project out probably a decade into the future, where enrollment's going to be, barring any new subdivision coming in or whatever. But, you know, it's and for a lot of our districts, we haven't hit bottom yet. It isn't like we're, you know, and I often ask my district administrators, so on a graph, where are you at? Have you, is this the low point? Is this the new normal, or are you still going to be having to, you know, face reductions in the future?
More money per student, would that help, though?
And we got some areas of the state. So, in other words, Milwaukee gets spends more money per pupil than any place in the state of Wisconsin. Okay, so do they need more money? I guess I question. Because what are we getting in Milwaukee as far as a outcome? Their educational results in Milwaukee are not good.
Tony?
Well, so to Howard's point, one thing I want to make sure everybody understands, you know, several decades ago, Governor Tommy Thompson, who worked with a Democrat legislature, the standard was two-thirds funding. The last two budgets, we have been at two-thirds funding for K-12 education. So that's one thing people have to understand. So we, and to be fair, you know, for quite a few years, we were not at two-thirds funding. We now are at two-thirds funding. As we got out of the economy, as we're finally get, you know, funding things like we should have done in the first place. But the fact of the matter is we're back at two-thirds funding. The other thing is, in our area, like New Lisbon is currently in my area. Unfortunately, I'll lose that coming up. But they are going to lose 47 students. So once again, this is a school district of roughly 500 kids. They're going to lose 40 kids by 2028 due to graduations. And once again, they're not bringing up that kindergarten class. They can already see it. So 40 kids for a school district of 500 is a tremendous amount of money to lose, to Howard's point, like a Weston or something like that. So right now, the funding formula for the state doesn't allocate for those declining enrollments. So, I mean, that's something we'll definitely look at. But there's also some other conversations that we need to have as a state, as far as, you know, just like we're having with the UW, you know, what is that footprint moving forward? Because, you know, I've already talked about the demographics. You know, we're not getting the birth rates like we once had. And to your point, you know, the state, we're up to two-thirds. I think next budget, we did in this budget, it was $325 per year per pupil. So there was a pretty significant increase. That will happen next budget as well, because the governor actually vetoed that part and made the $325 per year per pupil for the next 400 years. So that's going to be a struggle when you look at property taxes and things like that. So
good stuff. Good subjects. We could talk all day about it. So appreciate you guys coming in today.
Yeah. Thanks,
have a great day.
You bet. Representative Tony Kurtz, State Senator Howard Markline for their monthly visit on our morning show.